Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And we need to do that because there's so many toxic chemicals out there. They're in the food we eat, the water we drink. They're in our homes, our schools, our workplaces, even in our bodies from past exposures. But there's something we can do about all these toxic chemicals. If you're being exposed to something or you have chemicals in your body that you want to remove, it can all be done. That we know how to eliminate toxic chemicals from most every environment now. It's just a matter of learning it and actually deciding to do it. So that's what this show is about. We're talking about where the toxic chemicals are, but also what are the safer solution and who's doing what to make this world a safer place. It is Monday, October 14th. The sun is shining here in Clearwater, Florida. And today we're going to be talking about how to have a toxic-free dog. Now, animals have bodies just like we humans have bodies, and they are affected by toxic chemicals as well, except that they are much smaller. And so all the toxic chemicals that we're exposed to in our daily lives, our pets are being exposed to as well, except that they're being exposed to, well, depending on the size of your dog, they're being exposed to 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 times the amount of toxic chemicals that we are, just because they're being exposed to those same amounts, but their bodies are smaller. And so we have pets now of all kinds having all kinds of illnesses that pets didn't used to have before, that they have thyroid problems, they get cancer, all kinds of things. And so another reason to have a toxic-free home is to protect your pet and have a healthy pet. So my guest today is Leslie May and Johan the dog, who are authors of Raise a Green Dog blog. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
You're welcome. And is Johan there too?
Oh, we might hear him bark a little. He's a Sheltie.
Okay, good. I just thought he might want to say hello.
I had to keep him out of the cat litter box, though.
Okay.
So he's in a little confined area.
Okay, well, anytime he'd like to chime in, he's perfectly welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. He appreciates that.
Good. So tell us how you got interested in having a green dog.
Well, I was raised green. I was raised eco-friendly. I was raised organic. My mother taught, I really didn't know any other way. You know how when you're raised a certain way,
yes,
you don't know there's another way, right?
Right.
But she was very forward-thinking. She grew up on the campus of IU in Bloomington and was exposed to a lot of different cultures and ideas, which was amazing in my education as well. And she picked up on the importance of living a simpler life, a whole life, a fresh life in a lot of different aspects. And it is a decision she made to how she wanted to have her life be. And so, of course, being her daughter, that is the life that I led as well. She had an organic garden. She cleaned with water and vinegar. I didn't even know what a lawn chemical was until I built my own house and saw my neighbors spreading things. You know, so when I always had cats. I still have my Wolfie and Wiggy. Everybody's named after composers, by the way. They're
good.
17 and 18 years old now. Yeah, Wolfie and Wiggy. Wiggy's short for Ludwig, by the way. They're 17 and 18, and when I started working from home, I just couldn't wait to adopt a dog. I felt it was time. I had the time to devote. And, you know, dogs are exposed outside a lot more, right, than cats are. I have indoor cats. So I obviously had transferred my life to my cat's life, and I had to my dog's life as well as far as eating and being inside. But I had some things to learn about being outside, and that's, you know, we learned a lot of things. My dog has a blog, and people found out that we were green, eco-friendly, and organic, and they started emailing him and asking him a lot of questions. Things from, what kind of lotion does your mom put on her legs? Because I know you lick her legs. You know,
oh,
that's safe for
cute.
You. all kinds of little things like that. And the questions became so prolific that I couldn't even answer them all. And I'm like, you know what? People are hungry. They're hungry for information. They're hungry for knowledge. I'm just going to share what I do. And mm-hmm. that's what Raise a Green Dog is and how it started. Right. I adopted Johan in 2004 from a no-kill shelter. And I started the blog in 2007. So.
Well, very good. Very good. So you have a lot to tell us today. So, what
I
do you
suppose.
Think? Of- Johann, you should probably say that Johann is probably Johann Sebastian Bach, the dog. Is that right?
That's exactly right. He's named after Bach, and I knew people would make fun of me for calling him Johann. But his first agility class, we do dog agility for fun. He got the nickname Yo-Yo. And it's his nickname. That's what we really call him.
I love that. I love that. And Wolfie the cat must be Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Yes, Wolfie. He was the first of the four that I have now. Wiggy and is Ludwig. And I have Gracie. Well, it's kind of hard to find a girl's name. There weren't a lot of classical composers with women's names. But Grace Williams is a... She has written amazing arias. I think she died in the 70s, but she's actually pretty famous in the opera world. So.
Well, good. I come from a classical music background, so I appreciate what you're doing.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay. So, gee, where should we start? Let's start by, we have a few minutes before the break, and I usually want to talk about, like, what are the toxic chemical exposures that might be occurring, to start off the show, and then we'll talk about the less toxic solutions. So tell us about some of the places where a dog might be exposed to toxic chemicals. Just start with anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's really broad, obviously, because they go pretty much everywhere we do, right? So I like to look at a dog's life as inside life and outside life. And they can be exposed to chemicals within the home if we use toxic cleaning products, how we clean our floor. My dogs lick things off the floor, so that's how they ingest it more strongly than we would ever. What they eat. You know, they can be exposed through toxic chemicals through what they eat, GMOs as well, fragrances, sprays, anything inside. They can also be exposed to things outside. Lawn chemicals are a big issue with dogs. You know, they spend a lot of time in our lawns.
Yes. Yes.
They can drink in streams that may be contaminated with Giardia. Actually, Gracie has gotten that before. Other toxic runoff chemicals, you know, from especially like in the Corn Belt or through fracking. Oh gosh, you know, we go to agility competitions and horse arenas where they actually have a lot of chemicals in the dirt. It's just kind of amazing, you know, if you look at what your dog encounters every day, that they can probably come into hundreds of toxic chemicals just in one day on a nice outing day. Inside and outside. So it's broad. It's very broad.
How do you see, have you noticed any particular illnesses that amongst animals, your own animals or other animals that are pets that you know of?
I do believe, there have been statistics and studies done lately, for example, lawn chemicals. There are some wonderful research facilities, including Purdue Veterinary Teaching Hospital, doing studies on lawn chemicals and the effects on dogs. And they are finding that dogs that are more exposed to conventional lawn chemicals, I'm speaking of, have more instances of canine lymphoma, as well as some breeds have more instances of bladder cancer. So... you know, there are really wonderful people doing amazing studies that can really help determine information about this.
Yes. We need to take a break. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Leslie May, and Johann the dog might come and make a special appearance as well. And we're talking about how to protect your dogs, your pets, from toxic chemicals. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Leslie May and Johann the Dog from Johann Sebastian Bach. And they write Raise a Green Dog blog and have a website. You can go to blog.raiseagreendog.com or just also go to raiseagreendog.com, and you'll find lots of information. I'm looking at your blog page, Leslie, and I see that you have a list of various articles that you've written, and some of them are about very specific toxic dangers. So I want to ask you about some of those. Let's start with, is your dog's stainless steel bowl radioactive?
Well, it's quite a headline, isn't it?
Yes. Because we don't think, well, so, you know, let me just tell you how I think, as a consumer advocate and somebody who's worked in this field of toxic chemicals for more than 30 years. When I see a statement like, is your dog's stainless steel bowl radioactive? I immediately think, wait a minute, if the dog's stainless steel bowl is radioactive, what about other stainless steel? So let's talk about stainless steel being radioactive.
Yes, yes. You know, this was kind of, it seemed at first when this was announced back in July of last year that it was a very shocking and unusual thing. But actually, it's kind of a common thing. There were some stainless steel bowls that were spot checked from Petco and found to be radioactive. They came from stainless steel, which is really scrap, right? Stainless steel is made from scrap, recycled metals. A lot of times these in scrap things are thrown in that may come from hospitals that are, you know, radioactive x-ray machines, whatever they may be. What they found was that these bowls were made from scrap that contained radioactive material. And it's actually a very common thing. When I started doing, how did these bowls become radioactive? I had a gut feeling of how it happened, but I did my research and wanted to really dig in deep, and find out how that could happen. And it's not just, you know, and some people thought, well, this is probably stainless steel bowls from China, right? Because everything from China is dangerous, some people believe, but it's not necessarily, have to be from China. It could actually be scrap from the United States as well.
Well, yes, because all, I mean, here's the thing about stainless steel is that, as you said, it's made from scrap, and it's a good thing to be recycling steel. That's a good thing for the environment. But what ends up happening, as you said, is that there could be all kinds of things that are in the stuff that's being recycled. And they're not necessarily filtered out, or, you know, it's not necessarily cleansed. It's just, you know, this is what's there in the scrap. And unfortunately, that's a downside to buying recycled materials, because there could be toxic chemicals in it. There could be toxic chemicals in recycled paper from the inks that are on in the paper that have been printed on, you know, the paper that's been recycled, et cetera. So
Not everything is checked. Things are spot checked, but not everything is checked. Right. So I was communicating with Steve Dale, who writes the Chicago Dog Blog, and he's like, how are we going to find out which ones are radioactive? I'm like, get a Geiger counter? I guess that's really the only solution, right?
Right.
Right? Right. Or not use stainless steel.
I mean, I've been writing about not using stainless steel for years because it also will leach out all kinds of heavy metals and other things. It's not just that it's radioactive, and it's unfortunate because there's so many stainless steel products. And stainless steel has good qualities to it about being able to wash it and all those other things. But this is just like another toxic chemical now in stainless steel. Mm-hmm. So, what do you recommend for a pet bowl?
I actually do use stainless steel. I researched a very high quality stainless steel a dog bowl company. The reason I don't use plastic is because it has the potential to leach BPA, an endocrine disruptor.
Right.
I don't use ceramic because of the potential of the lead from any glazes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about weighing risk. Right? And minimizing risk in your life and in your dog's life. And I determined from my own decision making that stainless steel was the least risky for my dogs.
Okay, good.
And I've actually had my bowls for like 10 years now. So, it's probably leached all out by now. Just kidding. but, you know, I think that my bowls are probably the safest material. That's the decision that I made. And I still really recommend that on my blog.
Yeah, yeah.
Bamboo. There are bamboo bowls that I've actually thought about. And I do have BPA-free travel bowls that are, they're rubber, but they're BPA-free. They're like, like an Algene bottle or whatever. And that's for travel, right?
Yeah.
Because if you dent them, denting them and scratching them heavily, that just increases risk. So I keep those bowls at home and use the BPA-free travel bowls for travel.
Good. Well, when I had my cats, I don't have cats anymore, but when I had my cats, I would use ceramic bowls and I would test them to make sure that they had lead-free glazes on them. And because unless it says lead-free specifically, then you still don't know. And I think that there's a lot of stores now that are aware of this. And so they're maybe choosing lead-free, but it's pretty easy to get, for about $25 at Home Depot, you can get a lead test kit. And so if I have anything ceramic, I just test it and I find out. So we need to take another break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Leslie May, and we're talking about toxic chemicals that your dog might be exposed to and how you can minimize their risk. And we'll be back in just a moment. No, we won't. We're not going off until for another 10 seconds. Sorry. Okay.
10 more seconds.
You know, sometimes I look at this little clock on my computer and I read the seconds instead of reading the minutes. So now we're going to break. This is Toxic Free Dog Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd and we'll be right back. Listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Leslie May and her dog Johan, and they write a blog.
And
there he is.
Excuse me. Well, I hope he doesn't speak too long. Sorry, Deborah.
It's totally fine. I was hoping he'd come and say hello. Okay, is that all okay now? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
He'll quiet down in a moment, and he is in the other room, so.
It's totally fine. I'm not worried about it. Because I can hear you. So, again, I'm looking at your list of articles here. Very interesting. Lots of information about toxic chemical exposures for dogs and also how to do things in a safe, toxic-free way. Also, there's a lot of green, natural, toxic-free products listed on this website. I'm at raiseagreendog.com, and there's a page. It's raiseagreendog.com/learn-how-to-help-your-dog-be-green. I'm sure you'll find it if you go to the website.
Yeah.
So
there's a link at the top, Learn to Be Green. Yep.
Yeah,
there are archived blog posts, actually.
That's what you want to click on is Learn to Be Green. And again, that's raiseagreendog.com, and then click on Learn to Be Green. So you have some information on here about fluoride. Let's talk about water. What kind of water do you give to your pets, because there's a lot of toxic chemicals in water?
Well, it's a very interesting subject right now for us, to tell you the honest truth.
Okay.
We, right now, we're living in the mountains in Georgia, and we have a well. And this summer, our well became contaminated with bacteria.
Mm.
And it took a while. It affected me. It didn't affect them. And then it just was a happenstance thing. I got poison ivy, which made my hands open, right? And washing my hands with the water created a constant reinfection in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I found out the well was contaminated. So we actually installed a UV filter, whole house UV filter in the cabin. That's how we did that. So we are completely bacteria-free, and we also filter. We have a filter that filters. We don't have to worry about fluoride here. However, I can mention that. You know, excessive minerals are common in the mountains. So we have a pure filter that gets out the excessive minerals, not all of the good ones, but the excessive ones, because we do.
Mm-hmm.
We do want to have water that has minerals and vitamins in it. Until I got the UV filter, however, I boiled the water for all of us. And I put a filter on. I had to change the filter very often because it would become contaminated with bacteria itself for showering and cleaning. But for drinking, cooking, we boiled. For then, I mean, I felt like I was living in a third world country for about 3 weeks. For the city, there are wonderful filters that you can get that will filter out chlorines and fluorides. And when we lived in the city on the city water system, we did use a filter like that. For virtually everything, cooking, drinking. And even you can get, you know, shower heads as well. And we had one of those as well. So,
I think
the water
it's
is the basis of a dog's life.
It
so
is.
It's really, really important, right? Really important.
Yeah, I think it's important for every home to have a water filter, considering the state of water nowadays. And it's important for humans, and it's important for pets. And I have one that I like very much that's very inexpensive. Well, not very inexpensive, but what I would call affordable for what it does, because it removes everything that you want to have removed, including fluoride and chloramines and all those things. And if you want to know more about that water filter, you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and go over in the right-hand column and scroll down, and you'll see a picture of it. And so take a look at that, especially if you have pets, because remember that your pets are, because of their size, they're being exposed to the same chemicals that you're being exposed to, except in much greater amounts because of the small size of their bodies. So earlier you were talking about the studies about how lawn chemicals are affecting dogs. Now, I see here that on this page we've been discussing, the Learn to Be Green page, you have a complete checklist for a healthier, safer lawn for your dog. So tell us about some of the things that people can do with their lawns.
Yeah, I think that people are kind of overwhelmed by organic lawn care and gardening. it's really not, you know, I mean, the whole term makes you think, oh my gosh, it sounds so difficult. But it's not, you know, if you go to a source and there's simple steps, it really is simple. I didn't know, when I built my home, the first thing that people started doing was spreading the stuff on the lawn, and I didn't know what they were doing because I wasn't raised that way. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, what are you doing? Well, we're putting the four-step program on. I'm like, well, what's that? And they told me, and I said, well, that doesn't sound healthy. I mean, you know, instinctively my alarm went off. And so I, the land that the home had built on had been sitting for 25 years, but with nothing happening on it, but it used to be farmland. So it's pretty much stripped of nutrients at that point. So, mm-hmm. of course, you know, they did have to feed, we did have to feed our lawns to get them to grow correctly. And we were in an HOA situation, so, you know, you can't have a dandelion in your front yard. So yeah. We had to really have an effort in growing this lawn organically. And I tried different things. I would use corn gluten in the spring to keep the weeds down. I would overseed regularly. I used fish emulsion because I did find some pellet-based, organic, wonderful fertilizers, but I didn't care what it was. If it was down there, Gracie would want to eat it. mm-hmm. So we switched to a spray fish emulsion, which we could actually use almost 6-7 times a year very safely and feed the lawn, like, on a really regular basis. I use nematodes for grubs because the Japanese beetles were horrific up there in the beginning, and they subsided over time, and I had river birches, which they love, but they subsided over time. Nematodes were amazing. I never had a flea. I pulled dandelions in the spring and the fall. It worked out very, very well, and it wasn't difficult. I had one of the best lawns in the neighborhood, you know, and people would complain regularly that their lawn care company killed their lawn.
Yes, I totally understand. So we're going to take another break, and when we come back, you mentioned fleas, so I want to hear about what you do in a non-toxic and natural way to control fleas with both your dogs and your cats. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio, and my guest today is Leslie May and her dog, Johan, from RaiseAGreenDog.com. We'll be right back. Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Leslie May from Raise a Green Dog. She has a blog and a website, and so you just go to RaiseAGreenDog.com. And we've been talking about a whole page full of articles that she has from her blog. When you go to RaiseAGreenDog.com, you just click on Learn to Be Green, and you'll find all these articles that tell you not only where the toxic chemicals are, but what you can do to avoid them. Leslie, it's coming up on Christmas soon, even though it's mid-October as we're having this live show, and this show will be in the archives, so all the shows are recorded, and you can always listen to any show over again, or listen to shows that you've missed. Go to Talk toxicfreetalkradio.com. But we're coming up on Christmas. I know people are starting to think about this, and you have an article about which kind of Christmas tree is healthier for your dog and the environment. So tell us about that.
Oh, gosh. I guess that was last year I wrote that one. I haven't thought about Christmas trees for a while. We live in the mountains, and we have pine trees everywhere of all shapes and sizes. Cutting down one pine tree that's like 2 inches from another one is actually going to be good for the forest.
Right.
So that's what we do, because it thins out a little bit, lets light get to other plants, and lets them grow more efficiently and effectively. So we actually cut down our own little Charlie Brown Christmas tree. I know that, you know, everybody has thoughts about, you know, where are they going to get their tree this year? And there are so many different options. I mean, you can go buy a live tree, which is amazing. And I have a lot of friends that actually do that, that live in the city. And once it's, they've used it, and they go and plant it in their yard. And I think that's a wonderful idea. Other alternatives are, you know, buying from, one of the tree cutting places on the side of the road or at your local grocery store. I'm not a big fan of that idea. I think there's a lot of environmentally things wrong with that.
Yeah, I do too. The thing that I've ended up doing that I liked the most was going to a local, Christmas tree farm. And, that way we could just cut the tree fresh that they've been growing there, but we could also check out what kind of pesticides and things that they've been using or not.
And the nice thing is that there are organic farms now. Tree farms. There are organic tree farms. And of course then look at, mulch recycling options after, either doing it yourself or having it done as a commercial community project. But, and of course there are artificial trees as well.
Hello? Hello? I can't hear you. Hello? Todd? We don't have Leslie. Hello? 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 Well, while we're fixing this and trying to get Leslie back, I'll tell you more about her website. And hopefully we'll get her back. She talks about growing an organic vegetable garden for your dog so that you can feed your dog organic food. We were going to talk about fleas, and I'm hoping that, yes, my technician is working on getting Leslie back, and hopefully we can talk about fleas. In the meantime, I'll start telling you what she has to say about fleas. I've had experiences with fleas as well, and you really have to keep ahead of them. Getting to know fleas. There's well over 2,000 different types of fleas in the world, but it's the cat flea and the dog flea that are the most problematic for the dogs. Now, this is very cute because, she's back. Leslie, are you back?
Yes, I am. I don't know what happened.
Technology is live radio, so anything can happen technically. So we're talking about fleas, and I was just starting to read from your ultimate guide for fleas. So why don't you pick up and continue and tell us what to do about fleas without toxic pesticides?
Yeah. I think, fleas are really kind of easy. I know that once you get them, you don't think they are, because I've been there, trust me. But I think there are a lot of really very healthy, very environmentally friendly ways to kind of deal with fleas. In my yard, I spray garlic spray. Keep the fleas out of the yard. I do it a couple times a year, starting right at flea season, and then inside I put some diatomaceous earth, which I think is an amazing product, you know, in my carpets, around the baseboards, and it keeps, you know, all the bad bugs out. There are also, when you go out and about with your dog, that's when they're most likely to actually pick up a flea. Spraying, you know, there are lots of wonderful herbal sprays on the market that are very healthy, very friendly. We've got some on our website in the flea and tick section, and they just repel. The fleas don't like them, you know, so they just kind of just don't even hop on your dog. And that's really what you want. Fleas don't really stay on a dog that's healthy. So feeding a really high-quality diet, an organic diet if you can, fleas don't really like them. Now, I have brought a flea back on my dog from agility trials. Now, they didn't stay on the dog, but they got on the cats who are 17 and 18 and have, they're older. They have compromised immune systems all the time now, right? I mean, it just happens when you get older.
Right.
So we did get fleas. And there is a wonderful website called greenpaws.org, and there are links to, in that article, flea article in my blog. They have tested every single flea and tick product on the market for danger or less danger or no danger. It's from the Natural Resource Defense Council. We've interviewed their chemists before when they were doing this test, and they've kept it up to date. They're amazing. But, you know, spot-ons have really dangerous chemicals in them, and you really don't need them. You don't need them. There are, if you do need stronger products, because I have been there, I lived in the mountains in an area where it was major tick infestation. Very dangerous for my dogs to, you know, because actually one of my dogs got Rocky Mountain, and that is a killer. It can kill your dog. But we were very aware of the symptoms prior, so I knew exactly what it was the minute she collapsed. You know, for ticks, neem, anything with neem in it is a really great repellent. Keep them off your dog. They won't bite your dog. And that's what we're using in a really high tick-infested area. And then Green Paws has also tested some products that are over-the-counter. And, yes, they are stronger. And, yes, they are chemicals. But sometimes when you have a real big problem, you need something a little stronger. I mean, we realize that's reality. It's either a major life-threatening disease or a little chemical. You have to take the choices with the rest.
I completely agree. And I think that there are times when we do need to choose the chemical, even if it's toxic, in order to solve a problem. And this is why it's important to be thinking about what are the problems in advance so that it doesn't get to that state. But even I have used a toxic chemical if there's not a natural way to do it, if something has gotten to that degree where it's needed. But again,
I do give my dogs heartworm pills. And, and then there are a lot of people that say, I can't believe you do that, Leslie. But heartworm's very dangerous, very dangerous. I don't want them to ever get it. And if that's the only chemical that they ingest, one of the very, very, very few.
That's right. That's the point.
Yeah.
The point is that just because you might need to use something like your heartworm pills, if you eliminate as many other toxic exposures as you can, then it becomes less dangerous to do that. And and so it's looking
and
at, as you mentioned before, about risk.
It yes,
just reduce,
yes.
The I more mean, you reduce when, the toxic chemicals, the more you reduce your risk.
Exactly. And, you know, that's when, like, when Gracie got Rocky Mountain, she was very sick. And it's a neurological problem as well as a high fever. It's awful. She had to take antibiotics. There was no other way. But they worked on her because I don't think she's had them but one other time in her entire life. You know, and I can count on one hand how many times I've had them, and, well, I'm old now. There you go. I'm older. So 5 times in my life when I'm this age, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you, Leslie. We just have less than a minute left on the show, and thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for bringing all this information to people and presenting it in such a delightful and interesting way. I could give you about 10 seconds to say whatever you'd like, whatever else you'd like to say.
Yeah, I think that I just want to tell people that, you know, living a green, healthy, organic lifestyle seems like a very overwhelming thing to tackle. But really, if you just go to the Learn to Be Green section on RaiseYourGreenDog.com, take one thing, just make one little change today, one little change tomorrow or next week, and before you know it, your dog will be healthier, happier, and live a much longer life.
And thank you for being with us. I'm Jennifer Lynn Dowd. This is Pop Talk Radio. From the mountains to the sea,